The business end of dilation. Excentrica Gallimbits, the triple-breasted whore of Eroticon 6, lay back, absent-mindedly stroking her middle breast through the thin fabric which covered it, looking up at the frame of her monumental, truly mind-bending bed. Several dozen particularly large mattresses had been delivered from Scorch Lucida to outfit the colossal piece of furniture, though the number of mattresses that could actually be perceived at any one time was governed by a rather curious equation. N equals 4 plus PE raised to the product of ITP, I, of course, being the imaginary number, N being the number of mattresses, T being the local eroticon time, and P being the drink's equivalence variable, i.e. the amount the observers had to drink expressed as a proportion of one pan-galactic gargle blaster. Normal people argued that this equation was a zemload of irrational crap. Theoretical physicists, however, argued that it worked to such a high degree of accuracy, they didn't know why anyone would bother arguing against it in the first place. Shut, normal people would argue back, up. The equation that governs the relationship between theoretical physicists and the public is much more complicated and is not covered here, but here is some more on the equation governing Eccentrica's bed. It holds true in every circumstance except for two. The first exception is during a leap day, which happens every 27 Eroticon 6 years, where only zero mattresses can be seen at high noon, as it makes the maths easier. And the second exception is if the observer happens to be a higher dimensional being, who can see and lie on most or all of the mattresses at once. The bed was, in fact, designed to service Eccentrica's n-dimensional clients, but it was not designed by, as one might expect, a higher dimensional being itself. The contract was instead awarded to an engineering firm staffed entirely by functional alcoholics, which was an attractive selling point for Eccentrica due to how freely drunken engineers tipped, and they would no doubt be in need of entertainment in their off time on Eroticon 6. Also, there was the matter of where the drink's equivalence variable lay in the mattress equation. The foreman alone could regularly perceive upwards of 6 mattresses at once, and as a result, construction was completed on budget and a full 5 Eroticon 6 weeks ahead of time, well before the impending leap day, which carried with it the slight risk of turning the planet inside out should any infinities get bent out of shape by an unfinished, statically indeterminate pan-dimensional bed frame. Currently, Eccentrica Gallimbits could see 4.3 mattresses, which, given the time of day, meant she was feeling pretty good. She was taking a break from all the bleak sex she'd been having recently as a result of a competition she'd been running. Whoever is responsible for my most satisfying sexual experience this year, she'd announced, will be treated to one, all expenses paid, spectacularly erotic Eroticon night with me, your favorite triple-breasted whore. Zaphod Beeblebrox, she added reassuringly at the end of the promotional 5D, is barred from entry, so anyone has a chance. She nearly regretted the competition when an entire colony of extremely bronzed new Zaxraxnumians showed up. Aside from the bold colors of their polo shirts, the males of New Zaxraxnu are the least variegated gender of any species in the whole of the galaxy. This includes the fact that each one believes, against all logic and incredulous, disdainful looks, that their own personality and physical characteristics were far above and beyond that of any of their fellow Numian males, despite every last one of them existing within an eighth of a standard deviation from each other in every measurable way. This was the origin of the joke whose punchline was, "They should have named them," meaning planets Zaxraxnu and Sigma, the other way around. Their sameness includes also, however, the fact that they are all fabulously wealthy. Their ancestors had paid the Magrathians to demolish Zaxraxnu and build new Zaxraxnu, which was exactly the same in every measurable way to Zaxraxnu, except for the addition of large meadows of genetically modified tanning beds. Tanning beds are mostly considered a nuisance weed throughout the galaxy, though they were especially prized by the population of Zaxraxnu. This was confusing to most people, seeing that Zaxraxnu was a full 5 planetary orbitals closer to their solar system star than Zaxrax Sigma. Sunburn was a certainty on a clear or even just a partially overcast Numian day. Electing not to be confused, due to the dizzying sums of money involved, the Magrathians slipped a few genes into tanning bed DNA so that they not only grew like weeds on new Zaxraxnu, but upon reaching maturity, they also plucked themselves, walked to a warehouse, crawled into a foam-reinforced cardboard crate, and slowly expired while waiting to be shipped. The people of New Zaxraxnu were thus able to weather the galactic depression caused by the planet-building industry without lifting a finger. They sold their surplus, self-packing tanning beds to people who could no longer afford to build an entire planet on which to tan. At the last moment, therefore, Eccentrica Gallimbus elected not to regret the competition due to the dizzying sums of money involved. After several weeks of statistical sexual purgatory, the Numian males each spontaneously and at the same time decided to go celebrate the win that each of them was assured was theirs by downing as many pan-galactic gargle blasters on Zaxrex Sigma as they could before being chucked, incoherent, out onto the street. Every last one made it through half a drink. The colorful, undulating mass of polo shirts filled with inebriated Numian males caused a legendary traffic jam from which the planet's economy still hasn't quite recovered. Miss Gallimbus understandably needed a break from having sex for the competition after that, and instead decided to have sex with none other than the best bang since the big one, Zaphod Beeblebrox. At least, she thought she was taking a break from the competition, but Zaphod had brought something astonishing with him, flaming sex wax. It was something he had picked up on a planet whose name he couldn't be bothered to remember from some girl or another. Its melting point was so low, one only had to rub it for a few seconds between their hands or other appendages before it turned into a slick, hypoallergenic liquid. It also oxidized in spectacular blue, orange, and purple flames at a temperature just a few degrees over the nominal body temperature of most carbon-based life forms. The act of welcoming a throbbing, hard, thick, and flaming cock into her body, which caused the thin coating of flaming sex wax that had somehow or another wound up on every open patch of her skin, was, hands down, her most satisfying sexual experience of the year, decade, and possibly longer. She wondered if the sky felt that way when a meteor split through it. It did not, although the labia wetlands of Eroticon 6 rather enjoyed a good meteorite. She decided that since Zaphod had been ineligible to win the competition, it was the inventor of this flaming sex wax that deserved the night with her. The inventor of flaming sex wax was, like many of Earth's most successful inventors, very intelligent. The invention of flaming sex wax was, like many of Earth's most successful inventions, entirely an accident. An Earth woman named Janine had been carrying a lit candle and a bottle of hair conditioner with a dodgy cap as she passed near a lemon meringue pie on her dinner table. The pie had been brought to her by her boyfriend, as it was her birthday, and the two of them planned to enjoy it later. The candle was for her boyfriend, who was tied to four bedposts in the nearby bedroom, as it was her birthday, and she planned for him to enjoy the candle and then not enjoy it, and then enjoy it again very soon thereafter. The conditioner was for her, as she was about to have raucous sex, and she didn't want to forget it in her gym bag when she went to get a shower afterwards. She was just starting to formulate what she was going to drip wax onto first, when something else decided for her. Janine was blind, and she tripped over a shoe which had been left in a walkway by her boyfriend, who should have known better because he was also blind. She spilled conditioner, wax, and flame directly onto the lemon meringue pie, which went up in flames with a whoosh right near her face, but her skin barely registered any heat. She stretched her fingers out and felt the flames. She pulled back when she made contact out of an abundance of caution, but quickly reached out again and found they were just warm. She was so fascinated by the result that she brought it into her boyfriend, who was also fascinated. They probably would have forgot about sex altogether, but he was still bound by all four limbs, so for him to feel the flaming concoction, she dug her hand into the pie and drizzled some over his body. It burned and slid harmlessly over his nipples and chest. They quite immediately remembered sex again. Later on, the two of them did experiments and found that any citrus fruit meringue pie was acceptable for the production of flaming sex wax, as was any conditioner, so long as it was the cheapest one in the aisle, not currently on sale. The candle had to be red. They had perfected the recipe shortly before Janine bumped into Zaphod at a party, which was shortly before the two of them had sex. She called her boyfriend later, with whom she was in an open relationship, and relayed some of the details. He laughed at most of them, such as the pickup line involving being from another planet. But the thing that he laughed at most was her insistence that, despite the fact that by her own admission she had been quite drunk, he had three arms. "I'm telling you," she said, trying and failing not to pick up the giggles from his fits of laughter, "he was rubbing sex wax on with three hands." "Are you sure you didn't just also pick up a one-handed deaf mute and you had a threesome you didn't know about?" he managed to get out, before breaking down and laughing again. "Well, that seems improbable," she replied, and half a beat later, burst into her own fit of laughter. The two of them tried to put a figure on exactly how improbable it would be, and laughed and laughed and laughed while they did. A few Earth's weeks later, Eccentrica was thinking about improbability figures as well, and, what's more, she was in low orbit around a planet situated far out in the uncharted backwaters of the unfashionable end of the western spiral arm of the galaxy. She was hooking the logic circuits of a Bamboweenie 57 submeson brain to an atomic vector plotter, which she had suspended in a strong Brownian motion producer, in this case, a large bowl of melted flaming sex wax, which she'd managed to reproduce. Zaphod had been completely unhelpful when it came to finding the inventor of the flaming sex wax. His ship's navigational computer was much more helpful, and she worked out that the inventor must have come from the planet around which she was currently in orbit. A planet with such a woefully sparse entry in the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy that her very expensive personal computer didn't have enough information to locate the person she was looking for. However, she devised another way. The bowl in which the melted sex wax sat was actually the inverted dome of a working model of the Total Perspective Vortex. It had been made for her by Trin Dragula, who had visited Eroticon 6 perhaps a mite too quickly to be respectful after his wife's accidental death at his hands. Eccentrica had become fascinated with the machine after he had casually mentioned it in post-coital conversation, leaving out the bits about his wife, and she had immediately envisaged several alternative uses for the technology, such as the task she was about to put it to now. The wax was not only supplying the Brownian motion for her finite probability drive, but also the piece of matter from which the partial perspective eddy, which is what she called her model of the total perspective vortex, would extrapolate the surrounding universe to a radius of about 1 parsec. When she got the drive running, she used a practical application of the theory of indeterminacy to make the undergarments of the Earthling most associated with the flaming sex wax to jump 1 foot to the left. However, in a slight departure from the normal parlor trick, she did it with said person still in them. Then, Miss Gallenbits picked up her 3-foot-long, custom-made trans-hypersonic vibrator. About a third of its length was a vibrationally isolated handle, in which was set about 3 dozen dials, buttons, and toggles, 2 oscilloscopes, and an emergency flare, broad-spectrum electromagnetic SOS, and defibrillator pads for in case your heart stopped in the course of using it. A dizzying array of sensations could be accessed by tuning the various knobs and switches. For example, the feeling of receiving cunnilingus on the brilliant marble-sanded beaches of Syntragenus V, slightly buzzed on expensive champagne and fucking someone in the third stall of the restroom at Millieways, slightly buzzed on expensive champagne and being fucked in the third stall of the restroom at Millieways, or inside the heart of a supernova, just to name 4. It was on this latter setting Eccentrica mostly kept it, and what it was set to when she dipped the end into the dome of sex wax, supplying the proper amount of agitation to cause that same Earthling to jump a foot to the left 5.8 million more times in the span of a second. 6 seconds earlier, Janine had been surprised and dumbfounded at feeling as if she'd been not thrown exactly, but just kind of plurped a foot to the left. Just as she got her balance back, she was plurped to the left 5.8 million more times, her molecules harmlessly passing into anything solid, like her apartment wall, and existing there for a tiny fraction of a second before being moved again leftward. Janine was disorientated and confused, and had she been sighted, it probably wouldn't have helped the matter. Janine worked out that there was nothing at all to breathe just before Eccentrica's ship computer worked out where she was. It whisked around the planet to scoop her up, and just like that, Eccentrica had her bewildered and sputtering quarry aboard. Despite the surplus of breasts, no one could ever accuse Eccentrica Gallenbits of being all tits and no brain. Or rather they could, but it would be unwise to do so to her face. The last man who had done so was treated to a pleasurable but mentally taxing night of sexual congress on her multidimensional bed. He never realized how mentally taxing it was until his 3rd year of psychotherapy, which his doctor had recommended he give a try after developing a nightly compulsion to attempt diagramming out just what the fuck had happened on Eccentrica's bed, and in just which dimension each fucking thing had happened, using paper, a compass, straight edge, a grade 9 geometry book, a grade 12 geometry book, and a special edition Klein bottle of the old jank spirit, which was useful as a reference and, as each night wore on, as an analgesic. The airlock on the bridge opened with a hiss. Janine took a step forward and put her hand to the doorframe to steady herself. Eccentrica was pleasantly surprised by how very attractive she found her, as she wasn't expecting much more than a motile slime, possibly with a few tentacles, from such a backwards planet. Not that Eccentrica didn't find motile slime sexually appealing, She very much did. But Shanine was sexually appealing and pretty, and wouldn't leave a trail of slime to clean up everywhere she moved. Said Janine. Eccentrica replied with the Beth Salomon equivalent of, "Hi there, I'm so excited to meet you." It sounded like a language to Janine, and a rather beautiful one at that, but not one that she had ever heard before. "I couldn't begin to guess where that language comes from," Janine postulated, and she was right. Her nearest guess would have been off by more than 10,000 light years. Janine said, following up her earlier statement. Eccentrica felt silly and quickly retrieved a babblefish from her ship's glove compartment. She tried to show it to Janine and explain with lots of pointing, but when she deduced that the creature before her was blind, Eccentrica just placed it in its ear canal. "What the hell?" yelled Janine, reaching up to her ear, but Eccentrica grabbed her wrists and talked soothingly at her. Janine was soothed, not by the talk itself, but by the fact that she slowly started to understand it. She was still hearing the same strange and beautiful language, but after a few moments more, was understanding it completely. The babblefish, despite being good enough to disprove God's existence, wasn't quite enough for Janine to believe Eccentrica about where she was, why she was here, and how she'd got there. Neither was turning off the artificial gravity and putting the ship down on Earth's moon for Janine to experience 1/6 the gravity she was used to, as no fucking moron in their right mind could possibly believe that Eccentrica was somehow simulating the effect on a soundstage with an elaborate series of belts, pulleys, ropes, and hydrogen balloons. Thing was, Janine wasn't convinced she was in her right mind, or her left, rear, front, upper, or lower mind for that matter, so she remained unconvinced by Eccentrica. "Zaphod's third arm," muttered Eccentrica in frustration. Janine's ears pricked up. "Wait, what did you say?" After comparing notes on his sexual technique and the general size and shape of Zaphod's fourth arm, Janine decided to believe Eccentrica. Or more accurately, she decided that she was either on a spaceship or completely mad, and that there was more to be gained by believing Eccentrica if she was real than there was to be lost if she was a hallucination. Janine asked Eccentrica if she couldn't bring the ship around so she could get cell signal quick before they popped off to wherever it was Eccentrica had planned to take her because, unlike the party where she'd met Zaphod, she hadn't given her boyfriend advanced warning that she might be sleeping with someone else in short order. She wasn't sure that this step was strictly necessary given the circumstances, but it would make her feel better. "Hey Janine, what's up?" "Well, I'm rather embarrassed to admit this, but you remember that guy from the party who I thought had three arms? Zaphod?" He laughed. "How could I forget? Let me guess, you met him again, and he doesn't have three arms." "Oh, no, he does. It's just that, well, he has two heads as well, so I guess I was more drunk than I realized." "Well, that does sound like you," he said, grinning. "So, you're not going to believe this, and I'm not convinced I do either, but," she started, and then followed it up with what she knew about her whereabouts, whyabouts, and howabouts. She attempted to prove all this by demonstrating the babblefish. She had him speak German at her, which she was learning but had not mastered by any stretch, as quickly as he could, and then relayed back what he'd said with perfect understanding. He thought she had an odd way of telling him that she'd been making lots of headway in her German lessons, but was excited nonetheless, both for the fact in and of itself, but also because conversations that started this way with Janine usually eventually wound up in sex as immensely pleasurable as they were weird. And this was one hell of a weird starter. Janine shrugged at his excitement and wondered if it would have been better, in terms of fulfilling the spirit of their relationship's rules and meeting its boundaries, to have lied and just said she was going to have sex with a recent acquaintance. But she gave herself a pass for not considering that ahead of time, given where her head was at. She told her boyfriend that Eccentrica had promised no more than 40 minutes of time dilation so that she'd be able to give him a ring no problem in the morning, and then headed back through the doors to the bridge. "All set," Eccentrica said, smiling. "Yeah, guess so. I'm yours for the evening." Eccentrica's eyes hungrily took her in, looking at Janine's body like it was a football pitch where on every part of it there was a game-winning goal happening in real time and in slow motion. "Good." Eccentrica walked over and kissed her, deeply. Janine shivered. She experienced a momentary sensation that she didn't understand because no one on Earth had ever experienced it before. In moments of great arousal, every life form that exists gives out a tiny subliminal signal. This signal simply communicates a sense of what sort of night the receiver is in for. For almost everyone but Eccentrica Gallimbits, the signal is too minute to be noticed. Jeanine reeled for a moment, hit by a shocking, incomprehensible sense of desire. Eccentrica removed Jeanine's clothes with the dexterity and swiftness of a finite probability field, but with less regularity on the overall direction each garment traveled. She admired her little contest winner, which she was rather beginning to think of as her prize, and led her to the helm, which was just to the right of the finite probability drive slash partial perspective eddy, which was in turn just to the right of the captain's chair. Eccentrica set Jeanine back in the chair and dipped her left hand in the deliciously warm flaming sex wax. One end of a set of Rudolfo's self-binding fuzzy appendage cuffs, which Eccentrica had meticulously defuzzed herself, locked itself around Jeanine's wrist, ensuring it would remain in the upturned partial perspective eddy. Jeanine raised her eyebrows at this, which she learned from other humans to be a puzzled look, and hoped it was more or less universal, or at least galactic. For safety, Eccentrica cooed, setting off a wave of goose pimples across Jeanine's flesh, then sat in the captain's chair and let the appendage cuff take hold of her wrist as well. She reached out and flicked a few switches that kicked off the autopilot, and then readjusted the partially finite probability perspective eddy drive, as she just decided to call it. It was a well-known fact that Eccentrica's erogenous zones extended 4 miles out from her body. Ford Prefect thought it was more like 5. These were both inaccurate. It was actually only 3 miles. It had previously been 6, but Miss Gallimbetz had elected for erogenous zone reduction surgery after a Vogon inexplicably moved just within 5 miles of her boudoir, and she found it utterly impossible to reach climax at home, and she lopped off another mile just to be sure. However, the partially finite probability perspective eddy drive, or PFT for short, or PFP-PED for slightly longer but more sensical, Eccentrica could, as she pleased, increase that radius by a factor of about 3 million, and right now it would please her very greatly. The autopilot set a course for Jupiter while Eccentrica groaned, feeling the field extend her erogenous zones while simultaneously binding her nervous system to her Earthling companions. It caused a curious amount of feedback. She rather hadn't been expecting to be turned on and surprised by the thoughts of a denizen of such a primitive place, but good lord, this thing was weird. And hot. In almost no time, the first asteroids of the solar system's asteroid belt started to slam into their shared erogenous zone. Each asteroid is separated by more than 500,000 miles on average, but with an erogenous zone some 6 million miles across, they started to feel very regular stimulation washing over them. Jeanine flushed and her heart pounded. She was positively reveling in the onslaught, and there was growing evidence of that on the seat cushion beneath her. Eccentrica bit a finger on her free hand and watched the writhing body of her sexy co-pilot. "Zarquan," she breathed into her finger. Jeanine's body reacted more and more sharply to each new meteoroid, even as they started to thin out when they approached the far end of the belt. She gasped for breath and asked, "Oh God, what the fuck was that?" "Your asteroid belt," Eccentrica said playfully, running a finger around her leftmost nipple. Asteroid belt. And then she felt something big coming on. Her back arched, and she dug the fingernails of her right hand into the chair, and grabbed at nothing but warm wax in the other. "Oh, fuck, Jupiter?" she asked. "Mm-hmm," Eccentrica confirmed, settling in for the ride. Jeanine felt like a pussy the size of Vega, which she would have made a clever vagina pun out of had she not been feeling like she was being opened up and split and pulled apart and filled more than she had ever been in her entire life. Her mouth opened, and she screamed silently in ecstasy. Eccentrica, too, enjoyed the sensation, but having experience with such matters did her best to stay composed, as she knew there were a lot more and bigger star systems to come along the way. Being telepathically linked to Eccentrica kept Jeanine from going absolutely out of her mind, but just barely. Jeanine had some time to recover after leaving the solar system and getting just mild stimulation from the Kuiper belt in comparison to the gas giants. She even managed to nap before encountering their next star system, which woke her with rather a start. If she'd thought Jupiter was something, Sirius A completely obliterated the notion of what she thought was the extent of her erogenous capacity. She cried after it passed through their erogenous zone, which briefly worried Eccentrica until she heard the breathy refrain of "more, more, more" dribbling out of Jeanine's mouth, along with a notable amount of saliva. After several dozen encounters more like this, Eccentrica braced herself. She was now a drooling mess herself, an infinitely more composed one than her companion, but exceedingly worked up all the same. She double-checked the charts and calculations and held her breath as her nimble craft swung its nose directly at its next target. "I don't know if I can do any more," panted Jeanine, happily but sincerely. "Just one more stop. Sagittarius A, you call it, according to my computer." Sagittarius A, Jeanine thought, and then recognition washed over her. "You can't mean..." She was cut off by a slight burst of acceleration that pushed them both back into their seats. The supermassive black hole at the center of the galaxy loomed large on the display screen. Up to this point, they had been the ones swallowing up the sensations. Now, they would be swallowed up by them, Eccentrica hoped. She cut power to the thrusters, and the craft coasted along, the faint thrum and vibration of the engines now gone. Jeanine was relieved at first, since she couldn't see the dazzling false-color quasar arcing across the viewscreen. But then, she felt something, small at first, but growing, like sledding down an increasingly steep hill. They were accelerating again, but Jeanine could not feel her seat pushing against her back, which meant that her and the ship were both being accelerated by something else, which meant nothing good, Jeanine deduced. Eccentrica, who could see the dazzling false-colored quasar arcing across the viewscreen, wasn't looking at it. Her attention was fixated on a graphic representation of the local gravity in her tiny ship. Her free hand rested idly on the accelerator, or more to the point in this situation, the decelerator, which was its function if pulled back past its midpoint. 10 seconds until point of no return, the ship announced. This was the distance from the black hole at which they would not have enough thrust to reach escape velocity. It was denoted by a fat red line pulsating on the gravity screen. Eccentrica's heart nearly burst into bits. She felt her muscles tense and instinctively tried to yank back on the accelerator, i.e. forward on the decelerator, but she stopped them. Before her muscles had time to regroup and try again, she eased her hand into her lap and sighed, and watched the little representation of the craft on the monitor blip silently toward its doom. Their doom. Their ruination in the pursuit of pleasure. Jeanine was about to protest. No, she was about to scream. No, she was about to revolt. This was suicide. But just as that thought entered her mind, it completely deatomized, and she seemed unable to have a coherent one again. They had reached the edge of Sagittarius A's accretion disk. Nothing they had flown by yet, not even their weird three-way with the triple-body red giant star system, could have prepared Jeanine for this. More tellingly, nothing Eccentrica had ever experienced in her life could have prepared her for this. Both of them were going out of their minds with the sensations. Endless, hot celestial swirls engulfed them and stroked them and passed through them. A thought flashed through Jeanine's mind. This giant, insatiable hole at the center of the galaxy was its progenitor. They were returning to the galaxy's cunt, which still so ached to be fucked that it swallowed everything it could into itself. The telepathic link facilitated by the PFP-PED sent this thought careering through Eccentrica's brain, which caused her to buck uncontrollably up at the air in the direction of the screen displaying the black hole. "Fuck us, Sagittarius A," Eccentrica cried. Jeanine joined her. "Swallow us up, please," she begged. "Eat my pussy. Eat me. Swallow me up completely. Take me. Take me." "Take us," Eccentrica agreed. They and their craft were hurled about by the indifferent tsunamis of this unholy behemoth. Somewhere deep in her mind, Jeanine knew that this was it, but couldn't have cared even if she'd had a 7,000th of her wits about her. It was too good. This was before, somehow, Eccentrica had managed to reach for, grab, turn on, and push the end of her trans-hypersonic vibrator into Jeanine's clit, vibrating at full supernova. Jeanine felt that she'd exploded into a million billion neurons of vibrating ecstasy. Her body lurched, causing her hand, restrained in the sex wax, to fling a non-trivial amount over the two of them, and also for the whole contraption to rock on its stand between the two of them, sending flaming sex wax spilling over the arms of their chairs to pool around their bodies. The intensity of the scenario, and the vibrator operating at relativistic speeds, caused the sex wax on Jeanine's cunt to burst into flames. The flames leapt up her body, into the dome of wax, and across to Eccentrica. The two were engulfed in a firestorm, faces upturned, screaming as the flames licked their jaws and curled around their faces. At this moment, they encountered the event horizon, where they were frozen, forever, embraced in the grip of an infinitely long gravitational extrusion of space-time, telepathically sharing the most intense orgasm since the one that created the universe at the Big Bang. At least, that's how it appeared to an outside observer. Inside the event horizon, their orgasm asymptotically approached infinity as they hurtled towards the singularity, which they slammed into a few seconds later. Janine and Eccentrica felt obliterated, and they felt whole. They felt made one with everything and everywhere all at once. They were fucking the universe, and the universe was fucking them. There was no beginning and no end to their erogenous zone. All was pleasure, and they were all, completely, deeply inside of everything. And all of existence was stretching and pressing and pushing into them, filling them infinitely full, infinitely deeply. Mathematicians have not yet discovered the equations that describe what happens at a singularity, but it's all actually quite simple. Take an orgasm, multiply it by everything, and divide it by nothing. Compound the interest from now until the end of space-time, pass through the Big Bang, do not pass go, do not collect $200, but do continue on until reaching present day again. Repeat 6 by 9 times, or 42 times, whichever comes last after preceding the final penultimate prime mover. As the average reader or listener will have worked out by now, this equates to just about a billion years on a Minkowski world line running straight into the singularity, and exactly half an hour on a world line running parallel to the singularity. Specifically, the world line of interest is the one where Eccentrica had, before departing Eroticon 6, left a tubular package on her bed. It was a child's toy, an unbreakable cryptex. They had something analogous on Earth, in fact, which went by the almost certainly racist name of Chinese finger trap in America, or the almost certainly sexist name of Mädchen finger in Germany. By the most very basic and apparent laws of quantum mechanics, anyone could lock the wave function of the cryptex and its contents to their own mind, creating a password that was absolutely impervious to any and every attempted hack because, the more one tried to force it open, the more the password changed. Should someone manage to apply a force or technique that would in theory break the code or the cryptex or both, the cryptex was designed to annihilate itself. This would, of course, destroy part of the entangled information about quantum lock and key. Due to a law passed during the inflationary period of the universe stating that information can never be destroyed, this could not happen to an unbreakable cryptex without first resolving the paradox. It was resolved by collapsing the wave function, which was, quantum mechanically speaking, indistinguishable from the original owner opening the cryptex themselves, regardless of the distance separating the owner and the object. This had the effect of the contents being placed safely into the original owner's possession at the same time the cryptex was destroyed, which, as a bonus, treated the would-be thief to an exuberant quantum thwack upside the head. Prepubescent creatures on many worlds found these to be convenient places to store their diaries. The information needed to open the cryptex was inextricably bound to her wave function, which Eccentrica reasoned should be enough to keep her from being destroyed. That, or her orgasm would spread out at the speed of light from the singularity, eventually annihilating all of existence in one grand mal, which she reasoned could be worse. She had also reasoned that, should someone attempt to force open the cryptex, her information would have to be sent out of the singularity by quantum tunneling straight through it. Beside the unbreakable cryptex, therefore, Eccentrica had left some insurance that someone would, in short order, attempt to open it. This insurance came in the form of an invitation to Zaphod for an encore, and a note which stated the contents of the cryptex. After their billion mind-melting years, time started to slowly wind forward again. They were being transported immediately through the singularity, but immediately is a bit of a flexible concept to a black hole. Janine, Eccentrica, and the little craft were like amoeba strapped to the warhead of a cruise missile. They were sent at multiples of the speed of light through the inside of the black hole, which was blaring the brightest white possible at them, not just through the view screen, but shining through the skin of the craft itself. It would have been enough to make the chief marketing executive for Clorox cry, except that only 4 people in marketing were ever known to have human emotions or indeed souls, and he was not one of them. As for Janine and Eccentrica, the two of them hung on and screamed in ecstasy as they span and hurtled down an infinite wormhole for a somewhat finite amount of time. With a plurp, it was all over. Their ship coasted along in orbit above Sagittarius A, well outside its event horizon. The PFP-PED had overloaded and had a stroke, a previously unheard-of malady for logic circuits of any make. They would have attempted to revive it, but all they had was the defibrillator from Eccentrica's vibrator, not the refibrillator needed for electronics. This left the two of them to adjust to the extents of just their own natural biological erogenous zones. Both of them felt comforted by the warm flames on their bodies, which were slowly dying down as the remaining wax burned off. In Eccentrica's lap sat a bottle of the old Jank spirit, the contents of her unbreakable cryptex. Despite the surplus of breasts, no one could ever accuse Eccentrica Gallimbits of being all tits and no brains. Presently, a familiar voice hailed them from over the sub-ether communications network. "Hey, baby cakes," said Zaphod. "What's the deal leaving a bottle of Jank's for me in one of those whatchacallits? Thought I just about got it, and then I got smacked upside the head by something. Not really sure. Where I..." Eccentrica closed the channel. "I think," she said, tapping the bottle with a fingertip and looking over at her exhausted new friend between heaving breaths, "that I could use a drink." "I think," Janine replied after 4 minutes of bitter work coordinating all the physical and mental activity necessary to do anything at all, "I may have had enough." There was a pause for another 2 minutes while the two of them breathed heavily. "Although, I may like to do it again." Eccentrica grinned and lulled her scalp about on the headrest behind her. "You're fun," she eventually decided. It was then that the ship's onboard computer locked onto a sub-ether beacon and readjusted the clocks for local time, which it announced. "Oh, that's odd," Eccentrica mused. "What?" Janine panted back. "We've arrived before we left." Janine's nearly liquefied central nervous system untangled this for a few moments. "Does that mean," she asked, "that my boyfriend won't be expecting me to call for a while yet?"